time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hanna Oli, Pop Rock Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rock, the Pop Rock Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hey, det här är Hits från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rock Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. Sure, I'm glad you did. As are our advertisers. Remember to support them because they support us. Most people who advertise on podcasts these days, when you go to their website, they'll have a little, they used to give you a little code so you could save a couple dollars, but I don't know if any of you picked up a newspaper or watched TV lately. The world just doesn't work conveniently like that anymore. But what they do have on most websites is a little thing, a little like fill-in type deal. And folks, don't put a doctoral thesis in it. All they want to know is how you heard about them. And that way they know what's working and where to keep sending checks. And the internet economy is trickle down. So when those checks go, eventually they trickle down to us and I can buy expensive food for my expensive dog and we can keep the lights on around here. No, we're gonna go out for the weekend. That's what we're doing. The wife will drag me to Disney. I can already picture it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been to Disney. I live in South Florida. We have been to Disney so many times. When we go, the animals recognize me. It's just sad. And I'm like, here he is again. Anyhow, enough about Disney. We have a fantastic guest on today with us. He is a thespian, a filmmaker, director, producer. And if you've known any indie filmmakers, I'm missing about 28 different other jobs he does whilst making a movie. They do a lot. And you got to remember, folks, these people kept us sane during the pandemic. When we ran out of shit or stuff to watch, see, I'll have to edit that out. We turned to indie film. Suddenly all the grandmas knew how to work a Roku, and we were all watching Tubi and Amazon Prime and eating up the indie films. They saved us. And this is one of the fellas who did it. Stuart Brennan. Stuart, I should ask before the show. I'm chopping up your name. Brennan, right? Stuart Brennan?
That's right. A good Irish name. Yep.
All right. Fantastic. Brennan. What the hell was I thinking? Anyhow, Stuart, welcome to the show. And thank you so much for coming on. Filmmaking. You chose the expensive art. Nothing cheap about making movies.
Certainly isn't. No, I did. Yeah, I chose the expensive art. It's true. And you know what? That instantly reminds me of one of the first people who supported me in my career was this wonderful couple who owned an arts hotel, sculpture garden, an art gallery. And they realized, and they explained to me actually, that this was going to be a struggle. This was going to be a really hard career because it is one of the only artistic pursuits that really costs an awful lot of money to do it. Because either you've got to get the equipment or you've got to get the crew, you've got to get the cast, the locations, and the lists go on and on. Funny you say that. It resonates very strongly with me. Yeah, I chose a profession.
The cool thing about movies, television, theater shows, things of that nature is, man, it'll be in the middle of the night. I can't sleep, get up early or something. When I'm flipping through the TV and one of my guilty pleasures will happen to be on some channel. Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse or something just silly and dumb. Any of the Godzilla movies I'm a sucker for. And I know they're dumb. No, scientifically, that wouldn't work. But they have such a hold on me that I'll rewatch. I've seen it 100 million times, but I'll rewatch it. I can walk. Now, I like a lot. I'm into art. I'm a painter. For those who don't know, my day job is a painter. I am into art. My wife will tell you. I can hear her shaking her head in the other room going, please don't start, Jamie, please. Nobody cares about post-impressionism in the 1800s. Anyway, but I've never had that same experience with the painting where I'm like, I just got to go see this painting. I just have to experience this sculpture. And I'm talking, I've been to the Sistine Chapel and so I've seen some stuff. Doesn't hold a candle to watching Roadhouse at 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's the oldest form of art, isn't it? Storytelling around campfires and everything in between up until the modern day motion picture. And I think stories, they resonate in so many ways. I think whenever life is difficult, they can lift you up. They can sometimes show you the answers. And sometimes, like you say, with the Godzilla movies, they can just be plain fun and what you need. And that's what I love about everything that I do is telling stories.
Absolutely. We were talking a little bit before we started the show. Folks, Stuart has a new movie coming out. We're going to play the trailer. We're going to get into all of that in just 1 second, though. But me and tangents and whatnot. We were talking before the camera went on about how we both share. I think Stuart's probably into it more than I am, but not by much. A love of fantasy and fantasy films. Now, I'm quite a bit older than Stuart. I know, despite my looks, I'm an old man. I grew up in the 80s. And up until Lord of the Rings, there were some okay fantasy movies. They were all right. Excalibur, I don't know why everything was so shiny. It was like Cylon Warrior shiny, just crazy shiny.
But there was some shiny that film is.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Somebody's job, there was some poor squire that was shining the what out of armor, man. But I played Dungeons and Dragons as a kid, and so I was like, I'm going to be hypercritical on everything fantasy related, medieval related, really. And up until Lord of the Rings, or the modern, the better term would be the modern age, in so fact where technology advanced to a point where you could do a fantasy movie. You know what I mean? You could do a fantasy movie. You're putting on film what in the 80s, us, my 12-year-old self and our friends were imagining. We'd walk through the woods or the other side of the golf course and we'd hear a twig snap and we knew it was an orc. It really wasn't, folks, but in our minds. And Stuart's doing that. He's making that reality. You know what I mean? That is, at least in a film setting, it's got to be a cool, it's the coolest job in the world, man.
Do you know what it is? It certainly is. At times, it is definitely the coolest job in the world. And you're absolutely right. We all hungered for brilliant content, especially fantasy related. And there were some amazing films like Willow, Conan and the Barbarian.
Yeah, Willow was good.
They were great, but there weren't many of them. And once you've gone through three or four, you did have the glut of the Star Wars and Star Trek worlds that were out there, which were amazing and really set the bar for what you could achieve. But until I think Peter Jackson came along with his whole team at Weta, who were able to really take everything to that next level and set the bar, really.
And he found a producer or a team of producers like yourself, because you also do that. You're also writing checks, Stuart, making this. That's got to be interesting because it's you have multiple things going on in your brain. As a director, you're like, yes, we need a thermite explosion happening here, and I need clouds. Get me clouds coming over. I don't care how you do it. Just make the clouds happen. As a director, you're creative. You're painting. You're the painter there. And then as the producer, you're like my wife going, Jamie, that doesn't have to be a 6-foot canvas. Couldn't you achieve the same thing on an 18x24? We can afford that. And how you're limiting your audience if you paint, you know what I mean? It's just all the practicality of the art in my world. But this is all going on inside your head. You've got to be tossing and turning at night.
That's right. Yeah, and you are. And I think that's one of the most interesting things for audiences to take away from our conversations today is that whenever you're watching anything that's made in the independent world, you've had to make sacrifices all the way along, and you have to just keep trying to serve the story at every turn. Because I was looking today at The Lord of the Rings and how long they took to shoot those movies, and it's roughly around 450 filming days for one movie for Lord of the Rings, and obviously around a $90 million budget for that. And then you've got a movie like Mars.
They're not just paying the actors, they're paying all the guys on set and all the people schlepping stuff around and cooking food. And
that's right. Yeah, it's a huge operation. And yet for us, we had 10 days of filming. So 10 days versus 450. You're talking about Fords and Ferraris. It's going to take you on a journey. Just let's be both realistic and try and enjoy the journeys that you go on. Would I like to have reshot stuff? Of course. Would I like to have had more filming days? Of course. More extras? Of course. But did I work with what I had to make something that's fun to watch and an experience to go on? Yes. And that's your job. And some days you're thrilled with what you've got and you think, this is amazing. How perfect. And then other days you go back and you're kicking yourself thinking, things didn't go my way. I'm going to have to try and find an extra half hour to get some pickups, or I'm going to have to call up that actor and ask him to come back on the train because we need to go again. And it's really tough because you don't have the money and the luxury of time. So you've got to make every single second count. And I love that. It's a thrill. And you end up creating a bond with your cast and crew that's akin to family because you're leaning on each other so heavily. You're supporting each other on the bad days and lifting each other up. And that's the magic, man.
I think that there's a myth, especially here in America, at least. I don't know about the rest of the globe, probably to some extent. I think the rest of the world perhaps might be a little more open to art in all its forms. Here in America, there's this myth of indie isn't as good as studio-backed stuff. And I beg to differ with that. I have seen, and don't get me, I'm not saying every indie film or every indie TV show is just out of the ballpark, but I've seen a lot that are fantastic. And then I watch something studio, and I'm not trying to throw shade at anybody. I'm not trying to make anybody annoyed, just my own personal. I see the Crow remake. Checks were written. Big studios said, yeah, this is a brilliant idea. Let's do it. This is shooting fish in a barrel. They were wrong. It was not by any metrics of success on, other than it got completed. I guess that's a metric of success. But the big studios don't always, I'm not bagging on anybody, Disney, Snow White, that's all I'm saying. You know what I mean? Sometimes the big studio gets it wrong. And these guys have all the money and all the toys and all this stuff. Meanwhile, I've seen independent film, and I know craft services on that really was Little Caesar's Pizza in the box. You know what I mean? And everybody was happy to get it. But I'm thoroughly entertained by it. And I'm just so impressed as an art form that you guys do as much as you do with what you've got. I've never made an independent film. I've never made it. My ass was not on the line to, the phone wasn't ringing going, where's my return on investment, Jamie? I've never dealt with that in a creative endeavor, but I know you have, or I assume. And what's amazing when you see this stuff, if you've been remotely around a little bit, folks, and know this stuff just doesn't fall out of the sky. It just doesn't, everybody doesn't meet at Stewart's house and they go in the garage and make a movie. There might be a scene in that garage. Who knows? This stuff happens. And these actors and stuff that work on this stuff, they're not getting infinity pool money. Nobody's living in Tony Stark's house on the cliff there. Not doing that.
That's correct. And you know what? I think one of the things with indie film is the marketing of it is so limited because ultimately, look, you're up against huge studios who literally control everything right now. If Amazon make a movie, they own the platform it's coming out on. So if their movie's coming out, theirs is going to be front and center. Everyone's going to hear about it. And yours is going to be somewhere right down the end of new releases if you're lucky to get on new releases. So you may think that some of the indie films you've seen or you hear about aren't that great. The reality is people hate first and love later. And that's one of the truths that I've come to have to appreciate as a filmmaker. The moment I put a film out, all I get is hate. Just hate. Because 1 out of 100 people really didn't like it. And they're going to tell me. And they're going to troll me. But what I love is 5, 6, 7 years later, I get emails. I get messages on social media of people saying, hey, I love this movie. I've watched it like 3 or 4 times. It's one of my favorites. Just want to say, I keep up the great work. And that really lifts you. And I've been doing this for over 20 years now. So I've seen this happen time and again. And you have to just remind yourself every time you release a film, okay, here comes the attack and we're going to weather it. And unfortunately, I think in this day and age where people look to things like Rotten Tomatoes, look to things like IMDb, they take those scores as verbatim. That is, if the film's good or not. IMDb has its own algorithm. IMDb makes up the score. It's not even based on the votes. I have no idea. No one knows how it works.
Right.
But let me just ask you a question. If Amazon has produced the film and Amazon owns IMDb, is Amazon going to make their scores higher and yours lower? One would assume so because it drives traffic. So I think you have to kind of look around and sniff around when you start seeing all these reviews, because I see, for not just me, but all my friends, whenever their movie comes out on IMDb, flooded with ones. With one. 1 out of 10? Like, come on, we've all seen films that we haven't liked, but 1 out of 10 is a pretty low score. And a bit odd that it suddenly floods in. Almost on, like, before the film's released, these votes start coming in and you see them coming up as a filmmaker and you go, wow, okay. But this is a business, guys. And ultimately, all those studios have a fantasy film coming out shortly. They don't want people watching that one, spending money on that one. Are they hiring people or whatever else? I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist about it, but it makes sense to shut down your opposition. People Harvey Weinstein, he used to buy films, put them on a shelf so they didn't get released. So they didn't clutter up the release of another film.
Every big business does that. We've all heard. I'm telling you guys, Walmart will move into a little town or a smaller city or whatever and buy up all the competition or just work at a loss till they go under. And then all the prices go back up. That's how it's very predatory. My advice to any of the watchers and listeners and however you're hearing this or seeing it, yeah, Stuart's right. Don't go by critics. Don't go by... As an artist, I'm telling you, don't buy art because somebody said it's worth something. You know what I mean? I was just having this conversation with some people that bought some cruise ship art. And they're like, the company that sold us this will come appraise it. I'm like, oh, so the people that sold you will tell you how much they feel it's worth. And you're considering paying them money to do that? No. Go by what you like, number one. And number two, your friends. Word of mouth, man. If your friends are all into something, there's a reason you're friends with them. It's common interest. You guys are into the same stuff. That being said, anybody who watches a movie on Amazon or Tubi, any of these platforms, I don't know how much it affects the algorithm, honestly, but I think it can't hurt. Don't write a doctoral thesis. Don't write a book. Leave a comment. Leave a comment. Say, you know what? It was weird. There was too much CGI in this that didn't match up. The bullets didn't match up with the gunfire to my liking enough. Maybe take that into thought on the next film. But I did really blah, 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 blah. And I'm not saying pad your comment, but be honest, because you sat there for 2 hours. You know what I mean? You could have been mowing the lawn. Your wife's been after you for a week to do that or something else.
Absolutely. Or husband.
I don't want to get emails. But yeah, just be... I think the world, especially our country, is finding out right now, we only got ourselves. We are in the lifeboat right now, and we got to listen to Joes like us and take their word for something. If we see something, we think it's a cool film, we want to tell as many people as possible. I don't give a shit what Rotten Tomatoes says. I don't know those people. I don't trust those people. Aren't going to help me.
What you're saying there about comments is so true. I think I try and live by this, that whenever I see anyone posting anything that sort of is good for them or some good news or some sort of success, I always try and just post a comment now just to help encourage them and to show them that we're listening and we're supporting them on that journey. Because it's so easy to critique anything. But ultimately, as I'm saying with independent film, We know what mistakes we made. We were there. We've had to wrestle with those mistakes, and some of them...
Some of them were on purpose because we couldn't do it the way we wanted. Yeah, I get it.
And maybe there's intentions there that you're not seeing, and maybe on a second watch through, you'll pick up on things and go, oh, no, that I like that, actually. With big Hollywood films, if there's something you don't like, generally people will try and dissect it and try and understand it and try and then appreciate it. Indie film, they just say that's terrible.
It's crazy.
Just give a bit of love.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Stroh brings up a good point, is do watch things. I'll give you guys a good example. I think the movie came out in 1974. It is old. It's not as old as me, but it's up there. I was rewatching Mel Brooks's History of the World the other day. And they're in the chapter where they're in ancient Rome and they're trying to escape the Romans. And folks, I'm not giving anything away really, because it took me 50 years before I got this joke, and I've seen that movie about 900 times. But they're trying to escape, and they're in disguise, and they walk past this guy, a beggar, a Roman beggar in the street, and he's got black glasses on, he's blind. But then he puts him down a little bit, and he sees the one guy, and he goes, "Hey, Josephus," and gives him $5. And it said Alms for Oedipus was his sign. And Josephus was like, "Hey, MF-er." Never got the joke before. It took me 50 years. And then I was fall off the couch laughing so hard the other day. Because anybody who knows their Greek mythology gets that joke. I never got it. I know Greek mythology. It went past. So it's amazing what you can pick up a second time through, or a 902nd time through. It's very cool. And I got to tell you, yeah, Stuart's got a fantasy movie coming out, and he said, I have no dispute with it. He's the expert on this, not me. But it seems to me that there aren't that many fantasy movies out there. I mean, there might be a bunch coming out, but I don't see advertisements for them. I don't see commercials for them. And in our house, man, my wife is into fantasy too. I don't think we have our big Ren Fair in our town, and she's there every weekend. You know what I mean? She is. I know for the month of February that's where she's going to be every Sunday. Takes the whole every Sunday off from work, and her friends, I don't go with them to the Ren Fair because they're like, "Jamie, you would just point out all the inaccuracies of the Renaissance. That's no fun. We don't. You stay home with the dog and I don't know, watch a Western or something." But people are into fantasy.
No, it's a huge market, and I think it's totally underserved. I think it's so difficult to make a fantasy film. It really is, for numerous reasons. But it's got such a high bar that you need to be bringing the whole team along on. Usually it involves an awful lot of money to do anything. And there's very few people out there giving support and insights into how to go about a lot of these things. For me, one of the biggest things in fantasy films is making sure you have culture. Do you have a way people live? Do you have a history built in there that's relevant and resonating throughout the story? Because if you do, then suddenly you feel it's real. And if you feel it's real, then you're going to follow that story through to the end. And often when big budget things get this wrong, it just feels a bit soulless, and you find yourself hitting the next button or turning it off. And I think a lot of people love the idea of doing a show about dragons or doing a show of fantasy and things. But unless you've got people who are genuinely in love with that genre, the amount of detail and skill that's involved to pull it off is really difficult. And yeah, it's an underserved community, and we're a very quiet community. We like to read our books. Certainly when I was at school, it wasn't the coolest thing to talk about your elves and your Dungeons and Dragons and things.
No.
And now it's changing, and that's great. But I think that all the executives who are our age and older are playing catch up with that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we saw Dungeons and Dragons, the reboot that came out, which was fantastic. And it made an absolute fortune. And I thought, wow, okay, fantasy's coming home. Here we go. We're going to see all sorts of shows getting commissioned, all sorts of movies coming. And they didn't. And then you see video games like Baldur's Gate 3 comes out, makes, I think, over $1 billion. There's a huge market there for this. And that's one of the reasons why I thought it's time to start making the movies I want to see. And that started with War Chief, which is an orc thriller. Because there's only a handful of movies made with orcs. And so, yeah, we went for it and made an orc culture and show them off in that movie. We then did Assassin's Guild, which was skeletons. So we have the undead. And then we have Warlord, which is wood elves, and is particularly thrilling.
You know what's cool? I have a couple thoughts, but really what's cool is the lore. There's a built-in lore. You're not having to sell the idea out of the gate. Okay, this is an orc, this is an elf, this is what they do, and blah, blah, blah. It's already pretty much, for everybody who's watching that, common knowledge. You know what I mean? And this is a weird thing to say. Maybe not the jock boyfriend doesn't understand what everything... I am telling you, my wife has a group of girlfriends, and on the Sundays they're not going to the Renaissance Festival. They get together and play Dungeons & Dragons, and they're always asking me. And I'm like, man, I stopped playing Dungeons. The first time I kissed a girl was... That did it in for me with Dungeons and Dragons. I had one mission after that, at least to my 20s. But nah, it's just not my thing. And I sat in and read some of their stuff, and I'm like, oh, the robots? You guys have robots in the dungeons? What the heck is that? But it's part of that. What's the name of the video game? Baldur's Gate and all? It's part of that world, that genre. And what's interesting, so that's cool. That you got going. I am telling you, you're... From a marketing point, I am no expert. I'm a painter with a podcast. But it seems to me from the people I know, the younger people I know, they love these conventions where they all dress up in weird costumes that I don't know who the character is. This happens in my living. My inner 12-year-old is, dude, you won the lottery. They're all dressing up like superheroes and barbarians in the living room right now. This is in your house, but they love those conventions. I am telling you, you do. I don't know how that works. I imagine you rent a space or something, or rent a booth or whatever. And you get a couple wood elves just hanging out in there or whatever. People be like, line up here. We get a free poster. We're going to pick the one out of the first 1,000 people. Put your email address down on here. One of those type of deals. Yeah. I would imagine you do real well with.
Well, it's funny you mention that. So we're starting a film festival run for the movie, and we're going to be going to Days of the Dead, which is a big horror convention in Indianapolis, 30-odd thousand people. So we're going to be screening the film there. And we're also going to Gen Con, which is the biggest board gaming convention in North America. So 70,000 people. We're going to be screening the film there. And I'm going to be attending both of them, and some of the other cast and crew will hopefully be attending.
In your gear?
Oh, we're not going to be in the gear, but I'm going to have a Warlord t-shirt on. Oh, nice. And we're going to do this little promotion on social media that if you can find me in the convention and come up and tell me an Elvish phrase, which will be part of the promotion, we actually have a small gift, an Elvish gift to give to whoever comes up and says that. Yeah, I think the conventions are so wonderful. It's such a great opportunity to have so many people who are so passionate all together. We're really excited, and we're hoping to do a few more of them too.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. It looks like an amazing movie. Folks, I have not seen the movie, but I've seen the trailer, and it's fantastic. This is not, I'll tell you what, I'm a visual arts guy. That the poster image, I don't know what you call it, the poster mock-up image or whatever, it's on the front of the
poster,
But then there's an expanded one too. I saw somewhere online, and I'm like, "This is good. This is good art." I could be shooting myself in the foot. It could be AI. I don't know, but it doesn't look AI generated to me.
I'm just going to move my camera slightly because the sun's just decided to smash me in the face. So our poster art. So Stronghold now does everything. We do the release of the film, the marketing side of it, the production side of it. We have our own workshop where we make all the armor, weapons, props, SFX. And we have the digital side of it where we do VFX, editing, grading, sound, and music. So we're a bit of a one-stop shop, and this movie is our launch into distribution. So it thrills me that you've noticed the artwork, because we worked with an amazing Romanian artist. Me and him just kept bouncing back and forth, working on that artwork together. And
get him a cup of coffee, man, next time you see him, because that is good and not easy work either.
Thank you. No, it's not. He's incredibly gifted. His name's Bartos on Instagram, and Georgie Bartos. Definitely worth checking him out, and the other work he's doing is really cool.
It's amazing. Let's play the trailer so people know what we're talking about, because I think people have an idea when they hear fantasy and whatnot, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed with this trailer. Check this out, everybody. Here it is. This is Warlord. It's coming out this year, and I was going to, normally in this, I would say, as soon as they secure distribution, never mind on that, because they've secured it, baby. Cut that right out, because I think that's smart.
Thank you. Yeah, May 16th, we come out on most platforms. And a few months after that, we'll come out on the AVOD services like Tubi and things. It's been a great journey. I think filmmakers now, the whole model's changed and the industry's constantly evolving. Big companies closing down quite regularly. It's getting harder and harder to get your films greenlit, to raise money for them. And the biggest problem is distribution. And that for us has been the biggest frustration. The fact, so we, Lionsgate bought War Chief, which was our orc thriller for the US. They paid a lot of money for it. And we thought, fantastic, they're really going to promote this. They didn't tell us the release date. I didn't know it was for sale until somebody texted me and was like, oh, it's out now. I was like, great, that's a big hoo-ha. They did no press, no marketing, no premiere. They just dropped the film because they know they'll make their money back through all the different avenues. Yeah, exactly. Cookie cutter. And that's one of the problems with indie film is that they don't care. It could make millions, it's sure, content. If they really pushed it, but it's work and a little bit of risk. So just drop it out there and recoup over a 10 or 20-year plan.
There's quite a bit of difference between writing a check for something and talking your weirdo brother-in-law into getting a second mortgage on his house to help out or whatever. You know what? I'm not saying that happened. I'm saying, folks, I've known independent filmmakers. I knew a guy who had three mortgages on his house because he had a vision. Fortunately, it paid off and his wife did come back. They're married again. But yeah, that's the stuff indie filmmakers go through that I've seen. Anyhow, here's the trailer, folks. Check this out. This is Warlord. The 16th. I didn't know it came out the 16th. That's a week away. All right. Here it is, folks. Check this out.
You see, this is what happens when people don't pay their taxes.
Tax collectors, mother.
Hey, again.
Tomorrow, this stall will reopen under the supervision of the Sheriff of Flores.
I've been looking everywhere for you.
What's wrong?
The city's gone mad.
Who's been hurt?
This is a biker's kiss!
And this is a donkey's kiss.
I spoke to the elves.
This is dangerous.
I've read the scrolls.
They slaughtered.
I know, Troy. Elves are dangerous.
You steal from us and then offer us a token in return to not just forgive, but further help you.
We're nothing more than a rumor to humans these days, so I hear. Keeping it that way is the only way we keep things as they are.
If they find him here, they'll kill him.
Look what you bring to people who follow you.
Murder, mayhem, death. Look at the blood you spill in our city. Well, this stops today!
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Told you, fantastic trailer. Stuart and I were just talking off camera about how it's so important getting eyes on your project and checking out the independent film, supporting. You guys hear me shouting from the rooftops whenever we have some independent band on, how even if they're not your cup of tea, if you want good entertainment, go to your local venues. Check out what they're doing on a Friday night. And you got to support these guys and gals. Same, doubly so, goes with film. You know, we all want stuff to watch. We all do it. And I got to tell you, as the looking at the chessboard, we're all going to be spending a lot more nights at home looking for reasonably priced entertainment, which means Roku and however you watch your stuff. You know, me and my wife, we watch stuff all the time because it's cheaper than going out every night. You know what I mean? Plus, I'm an old man now. It's hard for me to do. My wife can stay up till 3 a.m, no problem. Me, the old man, I like to be in bed by 10, you know. There was a time, Stuart, when that was different, you know. Not so much anymore. Let me ask you on a personal level. When you were, you grew up in the UK somewhere, right?
That's correct, yeah, in the south, a place called Devon. Yeah.
Okay, cool. When you were a young lad there in merry old England, did you have sawdust in your bones? Did you know that being an actor, director, filmmaker was what you were going to be doing?
No, definitely not. I wanted to be a professional soccer player. And that's where I put my heart, soul, and energy. And I went to a big competition at Manchester United. I played for lots of local teams. And my parents, their heart was never in it. They never encouraged me. They would often say to me, you know, after whatever event we'd just won, that, you know, if we didn't win the next one, I should maybe pack it in. And so I was going to study law. Yeah, well, you know, I think in a way they were just being protective. They knew how difficult it is to be a professional sportsman, especially where I'm from, because we have no major professional teams really in my area. Certainly not the highest standard, the Premiership level. So lots of kids my age would have gone through Man United's training school or one of the other big teams. So I was going to be starting with a handicap. And ironically, later on, I get offered a professional contract to go and play football in the Maldives, of all places, and I turn it down.
Really?
Yeah, man. It's one of those moments you kind of look back, and that was a fork in my road. But I stuck with the acting because I was at university by then, and I was making films. But I made that decision when I was 18. I had applied to study law at university, and
Mom was thrilled.
Mom was thrilled, yeah.
And you said, actually,
no, she said it. They came to see me in a play, and the theater course didn't have enough male actors, and they needed some help. So somebody suggested me because I'd done a lot of stuff with my scout group. We'd done performances and things. And so they came along and said, hey, Stu, do you mind helping us out? We need an actor. And I said, great, fantastic. Like, I'll help out. And the teacher really liked what I was doing and said, hey, why don't you do this role as well? And why don't you do this role? And before you knew it, I was performing more than some of the actors on the course. And my parents came along and watched this play. And the next morning at breakfast, they said, look, if you enjoy that, why don't you do that as a career?
Mm.
And I thought about it. And I thought, you know, after all of the knockbacks on me wanting to do something as risky as try and be a soccer player, I just thought to myself, wow, they must really believe in me. I had really enjoyed it, and I'd got a great reaction from the audience whenever I'd come on stage. And I thought, you only live once. And I thought of Harrison Ford, and what a life he must have had, playing Indiana Jones and Han Solo. And I thought that would be pretty cool. So let's give it a go. And so then I withdrew my application. I went to Winchester, which is where my girlfriend at the time was going. this is back in like 2000, so the internet wasn't really a thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Devon, we didn't know professional actors or filmmakers or anything like
right,
that.
Right, yeah. So that's, we should no go clue. To the moon. Totally.
Yeah, exactly. The crazy. Only drama school I'd heard of was like Juilliard, and that was probably from a movie, you know. Right. So, and I wasn't going to New York. So I went to Winchester, lovely drama course. And when I was there in my first couple of months, I got cast in a short film that the third year students were doing. I thought, well, this is great fun. And I did the scenes. But as I was acting, I could hear them arguing about where to put the camera next. And when we finished the scene, that then this would blow into a proper argument and they'd be discussing it amongst themselves.
Right.
And I found for myself, I kind of see in pictures. So when I'd seen the script, I thought, well, look, you could put the camera here and you get a shot of that actor and you could put it over their shoulder and you get the other one. And then you could put it here and get a wide. I spoke up.
Wow.
Because I didn't know the terms, but I just sort of knew if you put the camera there, you'd catch it, what they were trying to achieve. And they listened to me, and to their credit, they said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. And they started doing what I was suggesting.
Oh.
So after this experience, I was like, hey, I think I might be able to do this. How do I do another one? It's back in 2000. I don't know how to make a film. No one around me knows right. how to make a film. But digital cameras have just come out. So you've got this thing called a PD-150, which is a Sony camera. And it's a little digital mini DV camera. And we had two of them in the school. So I thought, well, I'll get my hands on that. So I did the training course, and there I was with this. Computer editing had just come around. So we had a course in that. So I took the course in that and then learned computer editing. And this is all outside of my drama degree. And I thought, well, if I'm going to make a film, I should make a feature film because, you know, they sell. Short films don't make money, so I'm going to try and make a feature film. I have no idea what I'm doing or how much work this is going to involve.
But sometimes that's good.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Because you don't know that you're not supposed to be able to do some of the stuff you wind up doing, you know, and people are like, didn't anybody tell you you can't do that? You're like, well, I did it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I truly believe that. And I sort of say to anyone who's thinking about making film, just go and do it. Go and do it on your iPhone. Do it however you can, because you'll learn so much on that journey. And if you do a second one, you're going to bring all that experience to it. And that's what I did, is I just started making movies, feature films at university. I did 3 or 4 features and a few short films as well. And each time I tried to improve at something else. And I would study everything. So I would watch Good Will Hunting with the script. I'd managed to find the script in London. So I was in a bookshop. I'd read the script, watch the film, I'd pause it, and then I'd write my scene because I could understand how it, like, to format it. You know, right. I'm typing in like Microsoft Word. And I wrote my screenplay that way. And then to direct scenes, I would watch films I enjoyed and I would just pause them and kind of go, okay, I like where they put the camera. I'll make a shot list. I didn't know it was a shot list at the time. I'm just writing down a list of what
you're
I'm going to shoot.
You're a filmmaker. So
then you're,
that's
then, yeah, exactly.
Thanks. You know what I mean? That's.
Then you're doing it, you know. And later on, I discovered Robert Rodriguez and his book, Rebel Without a Crew, where he explains what he went through making El Mariachi for sort of $16,000, which goes on to play at Cannes and, you know, launches him as a filmmaker.
And folks out there that are not in the film business or the creative, they're going, wow, $16,000 is a lot of money. No, it isn't. Not for making a movie. That's
well.
That soccer player mentality, that background in athletics. And I tell people this all the time. I mentor a couple people in the, not how to paint, but how to run their art business better, you know, so you can live off of it. You know, that's the dream for the painters. Everybody I meet, they tell me, I want to be where you're at. I'm like, well, 25 years and you got to draw 3 hours a day. That's, you know, I said, really though, I said, look at any athlete. It's very it's very obvious there. The more you do something, the better you get at it. Tend to.
Yep.
That's usually how that works. And it can be anything, bacon, biscuits, whatever. The more you do it, because you're the bell curve, you've learned this, you've already been through, you don't have to waste more time learning that lesson because 87 more, the next 87 for you to learn and master. And you said you were a scout when you were younger, too. So I only imagine on the Elf movie, somebody's like, I can't get the fire lit here in the camp. Hold on. Here's how you do.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you know what? I think things like Cub Scouts, Girl Guides, and I think they're really wonderful opportunities for hanging out with people, because that's really what it was. It was the boys' club. You're just hanging out together, playing games and learning new skills. But it's a wonderful way to appreciate so much that the world has to offer and that activities have to offer. And in a world where we're all getting consumed by the devices around us, be them your phones, your laptops, your tablets, whatever, the outdoors just holds so many amazing opportunities. And I think young people especially don't seem to understand how much that impacts you as you get older. So me loving wood elves, of course, it was because I was running around as a scout through woods and learning woodcraft and knots and all the rest of it. You know, and that's bled into that, and that's now bled into a career. So, I've got a lot of time for that.
I was just talking to I was a club rat for a few decades and spent many weekends in fields, listening to repetitive music. And, now I'm an old man. I own a house. I have a big backyard with a giant vegetable garden that's my zen. I'm out there every day messing in the garden. Because it brings me peace and comfort. And so an old friend of mine who, back from my partying days and my clubbing days, was like, man, it's so weird seeing your posts and stuff, and your blog and whatever, because you're talking about squashes and pumpkins and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm older, man. I looking good and going to the latest club, a full freezer is much more important to me now. It's just you change. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I probably am enjoying this part of my life more than I did that part. That part of my life was a little, everybody tends to remember the fun stuff, but there was some hectic times in that world. You know what I mean? And, it's interesting. It's interesting. I wanted to ask you, making fantasy films, because we've all seen in our minds, we go back, of course, to the orcs of, the opening scene of Fellowship of the Ring. And you're like, holy shit, that's crazy looking. Do you guys utilize a lot of practical, or is it more computer generated? And if it is practical, man, doesn't that eat up all the money and the budget?
Yeah, do you know what? This is a great question. So doing practical effects, actually having physical items.
Glued on people's faces and stuff.
Yeah, it's expensive and it's hard. It's really difficult. You have to bring in all sorts of people to do it. It's very hard for just one person to do it.
And they don't work for pizza. They probably deserve, they have a skill and they want to be paid according to that skill set.
And that's right. And that's where it becomes so hard then for people to get into the industry, because if you want that sort of thing, you're going to hire the best company to do it. They're going to have the best people. So all the youngsters starting out, they don't really get those opportunities. And as less and less is being made, these opportunities are becoming harder and harder. So what we do at Stronghold, my company, we have been offering people long-term contracts. So instead of employing people for a large amount of money for a small period of time, we're saying, hey, we're going to employ you for 6 or 12 months. And that means we're going to oversee your development, your training. We're going to have you working on films, and you're going to have some job security, which is the one thing that everyone in this industry, just doesn't have. And so for the last sort of 3 or 4 years, this is how the company operates. And it means that we have our own workshop team who can, we've had concept artists who would come up with everything. That then goes through to the workshop team who will work out how to sculpt it, then how to mold it, then they'll create the pieces. We've got ovens and everything that make, these foam latex pieces. And then we'll need to paint them. and then we'll have to have two fittings. So actually, like, the orcs, you know, it starts off, here's an orc hand. This is the war shaman's hand from Warchief. So that's a foam latex piece, and then that needs to get affixed to a glove. So then you've got a glove in there, and then we've had to work on the finger
attachment.
We'll
never see the glove. We just see the hand.
So the bottom will actually then be coated, so it's got a really horrible bottom to it that's you wouldn't want touching you. And then you've got the top, you know, and so this is almost film ready.
Stuart's got the coolest job. He's got a fancy, you know, office there with all kinds of orc hands laying around it.
There is. It's like it's a little bit of a sort of mini Walt Disney World in a way, but because even things like the sword behind me, that was all designed, and then we had an actual blacksmith make it for us so that it could be used in fight sequences and things.
Folks out there, if you want to be doing this for a living, well, my suggestion is get a hold of Stuart and try to get a job or an internship or whatever they call it. I don't know what you got to do. Wash his car, pick up his drive, get him in your corner is what I'm saying. Sounds to me that's the winning move. That's cool that you guys do. We were talking, I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers or anything. We were talking off camera when we were playing that fantastic trailer about distribution. And over the course, I've been doing the podcast since 2013, and I've had a lot of indie filmmakers on, a lot. I knew nothing about movies or any of this stuff. This is just stuff I picked up from talking to people like yourself. And yeah, distribution is a pain in the ass. And these poor people, you know, the big, I remember, this may still be the case, they're like, well, we got to get into all these. They would get done making the movie. And they're like, okay, we need another $5,000 just to submit to film festivals. I thought you just send a movie into. Well, you do send the movie, but you got to send a check with it. And guess what, folks? If they don't pick your movie, they're not sending you the check back. You know what I mean? So you've spent all this money already, and now you got to spend some more. And hopefully some guy, Steve from XYZ Distribution, is walking around the film festival and happens to, you know, at least you're in the same room as him. But you said, you know what? We're just going to do that in-house now, and we'll just, I got a computer. I got email. I got a phone. I got a fabulous office here with orc hands. I can make this happen. Get the word
to
out.
To see it on the big screen. And I really believe that's such an important moment because you kind of get a chance to say thank you to everyone, and you get a chance for everyone to share it with their loved ones too. So that all went, and we were left with the void, which is the internet. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, people love to hate first and love second. And so you get so much hatred the moment you release anything online. I'm sure it's the same for any artist in any medium, but the moment you put it out there, geez, it's a wave of horror that comes back. But over the years, people then start reaching out and telling you how much they love your work. And suddenly you see these horrible reviews suddenly become milder, suddenly become good. And people go, well, hold on a second. What's going on here? This is good work. This is a good artist. So I've learned not to take any of that to heart. But when you've worked so hard in so much detail on a film and there's no celebration to it, it's kind of like, what have I spent a year doing?
Right.
And so we had this with a movie called Kingslayer, which is a really fun King Richard the Lionheart medieval movie. It's got John Rhys-Davies in it from Lord of the Rings, who plays Gimli. And it's got some other wonderful cast members in it. It's really cool. That film just came out and I heard nothing. Okay, but it had bidding wars and things for its rights, so it financially was doing well, and that meant that we got money to do Warchief. So, you know, we made Warchief, and that came out with Lionsgate, and again, just released. No premieres, no marketing.
No fanfare,
No fanfare, you know, so you kind of go, okay, well, we've all worked really hard for 2 years now. We had a film called Stalker with Bret the Hitman Hart in it, a horror film, and it's got Sophie Skelton from the TV show Outlander. I thought, okay, well, this one's going to get a lot of attention because people love that show and they love Bret the Hitman Hart. And, you know, came out no fanfare.
Jesus.
You go, okay, well, I guess I'm doing things right because people are paying for these movies and everything else, and we end up, you know, going another year without any fanfare. Assassin's Guild comes out. The sales company, I don't think they've even managed to get a US release yet, which is bizarre. And they were attached to Warlord, and ultimately we parted with them. It was very unacrimonious, which I won't go into just yet. I'm going
sometimes
to
it goes down that way, and it has to go down that way. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, and you know what? And it meant that some people lost their jobs and things over it, because that meant that we didn't have income that we were guaranteed and all the rest of it. But that made me so angry that I was like, right, I'm not going through this anymore. People deserve to be patted on the back for their work. People deserve to let others know about it and share it and build this community around this amazing thing that we're doing with this company and these films. And so we're releasing this one ourselves. And I'm loving it. I mean, we're playing at all sorts of film festivals around the world. It's winning awards. We've just got beautiful artwork. Everything that I care about is being factored into every decision, from the trailers to, you know, interviews, podcasts like this. And that's so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And that's the way it should be. And so I'm really proud of the fact that we've turned this corner, and I really hope audiences kind of get behind this and go, you know what? Yeah, the little man deserves to maybe win a round this time.
Absolutely. I get what you're saying, too. In my business, I don't work with galleries that much because they're a pain in the neck, and I don't like giving away part of the pie, you know? And the reality is I sell paintings every other day. It's not a big deal, you know what I mean, to sell a painting. Don't get me wrong. I love it when that happens. What is a big deal is what people don't see behind the scenes. And I know this is probably happens in your life as well. You know, my wife's like, hey, can we go to my sister's for dinner tonight? You know, and you're like, oh, I've already scheduled a podcast there, babe, or I got to get this painting done. I can't do it. And she's disappointed. Doesn't mean she doesn't go over there or whatever, but there's a lot of sacrifices that are made in being self-employed, running your own shop. And gallery, opening of a gallery, like I said, I really don't care. You know, yeah, if we sell something, great or whatever. What I do like is it's an opportunity for her to get gussied up, put on some stocking, you know, get gussied up and go pinky out and be with the, you know, posh spice it up for the night. You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't mind that either, but it isn't that important to me. Same thing with charity events. We do a lot of charities. There's tax reasons for that, but you're helping people, and that's great. Feel good helping out. But I really like the events that are around those events. It gives my wife an opportunity to go get gussied up, you know what I mean? And go out with me, and we're out on the town, and, you know, she's happy because people are like, oh, Jamie Rock, you know, all this bullshit. And, you know.
Yeah, you're celebrating your art.
You have to have that.
You're celebrating your career. Yeah, you do have to have that. But also, those events, they're building community around what you do, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think that's where galleries, you know, our sort of version of a gallery would be a film festival.
Mm-hmm.
They are important in so much as making sure that community's thriving, you know?
And it's a good networking opportunity. I always tell people, spend the $30, get some business cards, and I know everybody has phones today except me. I'm an old man and I leave things laying around. It's the only reason I don't have a phone. I learned
that
lesson. No, I don't use phone at all. I got a voicemail. Oh. Somebody needs to leave me a message. But the thing is, Stuart, remember when
you're
talking?
New hero. That's the coolest thing ever. That is the mark of a cool person in my book, someone who doesn't have a phone.
Remember when you were talking about the digital cameras, the 2000 coming out? You remember the... I had one. I paid $1,000 four times for this. So it was $4,000, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lot of paintings to sell. And this camera was about this big. I can't remember who made it, but it was a big brick looking thing. And it had a floppy disk, not the old kind, but the smaller. And that's what your film was. It stored the picture, the static pictures that you took. I had left those in nightclubs and one went through a washing machine. I just kept losing them. And every time I'd lose it, cell phone's the same, smartphone, I guess, is the same cost, right? I don't know. I've never bought one.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody says it's a grand. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine leaving that somewhere or something, you know? And I would, invariably. But that's the only way. I'm not cool by any means. My wife's got a cell phone or a smartphone, and she's always with me. So, you know, if the missiles are suddenly flying, she'll get a notice and say, hey, maybe we need to get under the table here. You know, I don't worry too much about it. But yeah, you know, it's cool. So you've got that, man, you've got your name on the door. You got all this stuff happening. You're putting movies out all the time. You're winning, Stuart. And I know it's never, anybody who is, creatives don't win. That's part of that's what other people outside looking in will say, stuff like that. What Stuart says when checks roll in, I'm sure this is what happens. I don't know him personally, other than this is our first conversation, but I can tell when the checks roll in, he's going, okay, this will pay for this, that. 4 days of shooting on this film, and you know, the money spent in his mind.
Yeah, he's not, that's going exactly out, right.
Do you go out and buy Gniptonops and you know, infinity pools and stuff like that for your house?
No, you know, no, and that's exactly it. It's a it's a journey that you're on as an artist, and when money comes in, yeah, absolutely, it's allocated. It's generally paying off credit cards, or it's securing somebody's job or some opportunities for other people in the future. You know, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. And but you know, it's really lovely for you to say that, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for saying that I'm winning, because as you say, as an artist, you got your head at that canvas, you're painting away, you're working away, and you don't often kind of lean back and recognize what you've done.
Because you don't have time to. Things have to be done.
You got another bill that needs to be paid. So
absolutely. Folks, 2 months ago, my wife walked into our living room, and she saw I was watching television. She goes, why are you? I have this fedora I wear all the time. And she's like, why are you wearing your hat? I'm like, because it's raining out, sweetie, and the roof's leaking, and I don't want my head getting wet. And she's like, what are we going to do? And a month later, we had a brand new roof installed and stuff, because kept that head on at the canvas. You know, you have to do that. And, you know, I got a pretty wife that likes shoes and stuff. You know what I mean? I want to keep that pretty wife. You know, I can't just. And it's funny, people. And in my business, I'm sure your business is like this too. I get young people all the time, and they're like, I want to do what you're doing, just sit around and paint all day. And I'm like, yeah, that would be great. I would love to have a day where I could do that. Right now, I'm painting on an average of about 4 hours a day. My day's usually about 16 to 17 hours a day. That's a Tuesday, folks. That never 7 days a week. And, you know, there's the phone. You got to be on the phone. You got to answer emails. You got to do podcasts. You got to do, you know, all this stuff to keep those plates spinning.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the hardest things for anyone who does multiple jobs on a film, be that writing and acting or directing and producing or all of the above, is that you're never living the life of luxury, being able to relax. You know, for example, my next film that I'll be directing, that I've written, I'm writing at the moment, and I'm going to film it later this year, so I need to get a move on and get that done. But where is the time? Because we're releasing a movie, we have another film in pre-production, and we've got, you know, a library of films that we're trying to do deals with to get out there, and then you're, you know, just managing a company and all the rest of it that goes with that. It's a lot.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, I bet there's some, you'll be in a meeting, you'll be doing this or on the phone or something, and there's a little part in the back of your mind going, man, I wish I was out on set playing with Orcans right now, you know, getting it to look right or whatever. And because that,
100%.
I don't care what kind of art you do, that's what all the creatives like doing is what they're passionate about, their art.
Yeah.
The business side can suck. The business side can be great. Believe my father, when I was growing up, he was always self-employed, not creatively. He built industrial equipment as an engineer, but he had this habit when a big deal would go through, he would sell a bunch of machinery or something. You know what I mean? A big deal would come through. He'd bring the check in and it would sit on the middle. He'd put it, stand it up on the middle of the table for the night. The next morning, my mom took it to the bank or whatever, but that was his little bringing meat home into the fire, I guess. You know what I mean? Just so we all knew, you know, this big ass house just didn't happen. You know what I mean? But you got to keep, the thing is even doing this, all this, I know Stuart couldn't be doing anything else. You know what I mean? At his heart, he's an artist. Artists have to do what they're doing. It's hard for non-creative people to wrap their head around this. Mick Jagger doesn't need to go on stage every other night. The guy owns islands and stuff. He could go away and we never hear from him again and live a very pleasant life with models or whatever he wanted. The reason he does is because he's an artist. We can't give it up. Can't do anything else. That's how we express ourselves.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's so difficult to fully appreciate what that actually means. But to give you a bit of an insight into kind of my world, and I had a weekend off, which was a rare thing to have 2 days. It was a bank holiday weekend, so I had 3 days off in a row.
Nice.
And I genuinely didn't have anything pressing, no work to catch up on or anything.
The planets aligned.
Planets aligned. And I went to see a play on the Friday evening. It was called A Trial of Witches. And it was fantastic. I was blown away by this play. It's set in Bury St. Edmunds, which is near where I live now, which is where all the witch trials began. So you've heard, obviously, of Salem and the Salem witch trials.
Yeah, but they were low potatoes compared to the British.
Well,
the British witches' trials were, they were stringing people up and doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, by the dozen, by the hundred, they were hanging people. And
yeah, Salem had, what, like four? You know, it wasn't even, you go to that museum, if you ever go to Salem, and you're like, somebody got squished with stones? That this is it? This is the big horror of the Salem witch? No, you're thinking, and the tour lady even says, no, if you're thinking of the British witch trials, you don't want to be there. You know?
Yeah.
You don't
want to
be.
I knew very little about it, and this play was just really wonderful at kind of bringing your attention to everything that went on with it. And it's so relevant today, where you see people being persecuted. And to think of it all those hundreds of years ago, it just really struck a chord with me. And I came back buzzing, absolutely buzzing. I was so excited that I'd seen these wonderful actors on stage, beautifully directed. And I just, you know, I was thinking about that play when I went to bed. I woke up in the next morning, bearing in mind, this is my day off now. I couldn't help myself. I had to start researching, like, who are some of the other people that got hung? How did this work? Like, what are some of the ways that they found people and hunted them down? And before you know it, I am sat there writing my own stage play.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was A Trial of Witches. Mine is called A Hunting of Witches. And I spend the next 3 days just writing that screenplay. I'm sunburnt because I've been sat out there just like a madman, just nonstop writing. My wife would bring me some food, you know, and she knew. I call it flying the plane. I said, you'd never go up to a pilot and interrupt a pilot when they're flying the plane.
Absolutely.
When I'm writing, I don't want to lose that thread.
No.
I'm there. And I spent all 3 days just writing and wrote this play, which we're going to be doing a read-through of shortly, with some actors locally, and see if we can get that on stage too, because I just think it's such an important thing that needs to be told, this history. These people need to be remembered. But yeah, that's the spilling out that kind of occurs as an artist. I did not wake up and go, I feel like writing a script today.
No, it just had to happen.
I had to write it. It just had to come out. And that happens constantly. And as you say, with the business side of things, always pushing a need, a must-have, a must-do onto your agenda each day, it's so difficult to find the time to make sure you can actually do what you want. And it's so wonderful to hear that you carve out that time to paint each day. And I've heard Stephen King does the same thing with writing. And that is what you have to do. And my plate is always full, and I'm always trying to carve out those moments to make time for my art.
It's cool that your wife is cool too. One of my biggest fears is from the movie The Shining. And everybody's like, of course, we're all afraid of that movie The Shining. No, my biggest fear is not to become Jack Torrance with sanity. I'm not talking being insane. But remember when Wendy comes in and wants to brings him a sandwich, and he's like, you're interrupting, and you know, it's just a real jerk. And you're like, tone it back there, Jack. But then again, I watch that and a part of me goes, yeah, but I kind of get it. You know what I mean? I kind of get it. And we have rules in our house. If the door to the studio is closed and I'm in here work, that means don't bother me right now, you know? And my dog's even trained in it. Like, I'll be working or something and my wife will come in and the dog will start barking at. I'm like, no, it's okay, Mei Ling. Settle down. The door is open. Yeah. She can come in, you know, it's fine. But she's the same way with her art, you know? Does your wife, is she in the film biz as well? Or totally out?
Does she run film festivals?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she runs some really great film festivals, the British Horror Film Festival and the British Independent Film Festival, both held at the British Museum in London. It's a beautiful space. And yeah, they're really wonderful events. Definitely worth checking out. And she runs
out there? Don't only wash Stuart's car, wash her car as well, because another sounds like another person to know, you know, to get in your corner. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Kind of, but
no, it's, you know what? Going to film festivals is my advice for that, to find people and meet people. I'm going to be going to film festivals all year. If you want to get into the industry, find these people, physically go and find them at film festivals. And before you do, watch what they've done before. Mm-hmm. Nothing impresses me more than somebody bringing up one of my old films.
Absolutely. Going, absolutely.
Hey, I watched it. I loved it. You know?
Whenever I go to parties or whatever, industry parties, film industry, film TV parties, I always do the MBD search. Cause when I know, I have an idea who's going to be there, who to keep an eye out for. But I do my research because I want to have that conversation where I'm like, you know, yeah, I like such and such. But really, when you did that guest spot on Law & Order in 1996 or whatever, you know, and they're like, holy, you know, they remember me then. My first film festival, I was living in San Diego, and the San Diego Film Festival got a hold of me, and they said, hey, we're honoring some actors at our thing. Could you perchance, could we work out a deal where you do a painting of them that we could give them as a gift for, you know, kind of set ourselves apart a little bit? And I said, absolutely. My request is, you don't have to pay me. I'll do it, you know, pro bono or whatever. Try to get a picture of that person with the painting for my website. You know, it just looks good. And they're like, well, we can do that. No problem. Can we also give you 2 VIP passes to the festival and all the parties? And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess, you know. So suddenly I went to one for an hour the first night, realized I didn't have any business cards, left the film festival, went to Kinko's, was real big there, you know, and went to Kinko's. I don't care what it costs. I need 1,000 business cards as quickly as you can make them. And they're like, well, what do you want on? I'm like, no, just black and white, my name, put pop artist on there. Here's my phone and email. That's all, and website. That's all I need. And that's what I did. And I had him within an hour and a half. And I got so much business from that because you just, and I'm not to make movies or be, I'm not in that world, but just people would call me up and say, hey, we need some paintings. We're doing this scene in this movie. Can we, you know, rent some paintings for the day? I said, no, yeah, you just put them in the movie. And can we put that they were in this movie on the website? Yeah. Oh, okay. That's great. And I tell my musician friends, I said, I've never seen a movie without music. Go to every film festival and talk to everybody you can there. These are people that spend a lot of money doing what they do. Jump on that train, baby. That's, you know, my advice. Why wouldn't you? You know?
Yeah, completely agree. It's a wonderful place to meet people and share ideas as well. And, you know, with your generosity there of offering the painting for free, I've always found whenever I offer anything for free, it comes back tenfold.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
so I live by that. You know, always happy to act in other people's films or do whatever I can to support people.
Yeah, you know, and I tell people all the time, I don't care what business you're in, doesn't matter. They're like, Jamie, how do you know all these people? I said, you know why? I'm a good hang. I'm fun to hang out with. People like that. If you're a creep and a jerk, nobody wants to hang out with you. So if you're having a bad day, push that shit down, put a smile on, and be a good hang. You know, it behooves you. It's in your interest to. In any business. But yeah, you know, it's Stuart doesn't have to do that because he's just a good hang in general. But you can't be so much of a good hang. Let me just preface this, that people take advantage of. You know, there's a time to be a boss and there's a time to be fun. You know what I mean? Sometimes you'll be surprised how often you can do both.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
If you're a good guy, people are going to want to do stuff, you know, and they'll work late. Oh, we got to work late tonight, you know. Okay, well, yeah, I'm part. If you're there, also, it's harder to sell to say, you guys got to work late. I'm going to hang out tonight or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, talking about being a good hang, this is a great segue. I hope you don't mind if I promote something else on the show. So alongside this film, I love merchandise. I love merchandise because it allows people to continue in the journey of the world that you've created with your film.
Yeah.
So we have worked on this movie with Anik Brewery, Anik Rum Company, and Lindisfarne Mead. And we've actually made our own beer. It's called Battle Brew Beer, which is incredible.
Cool.
The logo of the beer, you'll see it in the film. If you watch the brewery scenes, the bar scenes, you'll see that there is a keg of this beer in there. There's also some of the brewers are actually extras in the film as well. So whenever you see a keg in the background of anything, the brewers are probably around it. But we've made our own elven rum with them. So this is the rum with we have 50 limited edition toppers that go on the rum here. And, each one of these comes with its own limited edition story about
the tree itself. Folks, if you have a bar at home, even if you don't, you just have a bookshelf, you want that on it.
Yeah. So this is going live as this airs. This should be available on... if you go to stronghold.studio, our website, you'll be able to follow the links through.
Nice. And we have links down below, folks.
There's only 50 of these, but the rum is also available for sale on its own. It's delicious. They absolutely nailed it.
Nice.
My wife, she loves rum. And so that was what made us reach out to this company and say, hey, do you want to collab on something? We don't have any sort of financial involvement in this. It was purely just for fun. But it's so cool. And then we also did this. So we did mead. And so this is the Elvish mead. And
this is the
elves. On top there, and this again is so delicious. Man, you can just drink this stuff all day. I was going to have it open and have a little drink with you now, but I thought that's probably too dangerous.
It's cool having rum and mead because you don't see everybody and their uncle. Some people wanted me to do a vodka. This was years back. Man, this was 20 years ago. And so I researched a little bit, and at the time, 20 years ago, there was like 140 new vodkas hitting the market per year, you know, and it wasn't the right time for me. So I passed on the deal, but I don't know anybody who does custom rum and mead. I don't know anybody who does that.
Right.
How cool is that? You know,
when your wife is doing some D&D, what better to drink than some elven mead?
I'm telling you, she would,
I'll be honest, when we did the tasting, We'd talk through kind of ideas of what we'd like it to taste like or thought it might taste like. And honestly, when we sat down to taste these things with them at the brewery, it was incredible. And I thought they would be good, you know, as you do. I didn't expect them to be like my favorite drinks ever. And honest to God, that's what they're like.
Isn't it nice when things fall into place like that? You know, of course you've set it up to be more likely for things to fall into place. But when I really celebrate those moments, because it's like the, you know, you're on the right track. The universe, and I don't want to sound all California or anything. That's my wife's, she owns a crystal business and all that kind of shit. You know what I mean? But Stuart, we've got so many crystals in our house. I feel like Superman's Fortress of Solitude. It is crazy. But anyway, I celebrate those moments because the universe kind of tells you. At the same time, if you're on the wrong track, oh yes, the universe will show up and tell you that as well, you know, very effectively. But it's just, I know that I'm doing something right if things just tend to happen. And it's good. It's nice reassurance. Certainly. That's awesome. Well, they can get it at your website. Okay, cool. Folks, you got to do that. You got to do it. Get it. Nobody else is going to have that. You know? No, nobody else. And if you're getting, there comes a point. Now, I know a lot of youngsters will be watching this and whatnot. And you think you have a bar and it's full of empty bottles that you've drank. Nobody's impressed with an empty bottle. You start having girls come to your house. It's really cool to have different stuff to actually and learn how to make a couple cocktails. It's one of those things, man. You got to get a good suit. You got to have a bar. You know, if you're trying to be the cool James Bond bachelor, it doesn't just happen. You got to learn these things.
Mm-hmm. They're great in their own way and in their own time, but generally with mixers. If you want a real whiskey that you can sip, you need to spend a little bit more. Not a huge amount more.
They got to reach up. Yep.
Exactly. And once you do, and once you get into those,
you're not the hangovers half as bad. You know what I mean?
No, very true.
It's yeah. I got into drinking, and I used to drink like a punk rocker. You know, it was right out of the bottle. You know, it was bad when I was a kid. Can't do that now. Wouldn't want to. But the thing is I became a little bougie with it. I got a little snobbish. I'm the same way with coffee. I'll go out to wherever and get a cup of coffee. And, you know, my wife's like, well, I want a mocha, blah, 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 you know, with sprinkles and sour or whipped cream or whatever. I'm like, just a cup of black coffee. I'm fine. You know, I'm that way with whiskeys and tequilas, things like that. Rum. Mm-hmm. I want something good quality without a bunch of foof. I don't want it wearing a dress. I know that sounds, and I'm going to get emails for saying that. There's nothing wrong with anybody wearing a dress. You do you. But when it comes to whiskey or especially whiskey, I don't want a bunch of, I don't want an amusement park ride. Maybe I watched too many Reggie Cray movies. You know, maybe I watched too many gangster movies growing. Probably. I'll own it. And you'll see people out. You'll see people out. I see guys ordering like espresso martini. I'm like, what? Or a birthday cake drinks with birthday cake flavored vodka in it. I'm like, that's great, guy. You know, but I don't mean to judge people. I try not to be that, but I get a little judgy with that kind of stuff, you know? It's like doing business with somebody who has a limp handshake. I'm just like, oh, no.
You need to work on that handshake. Yeah. There is something about being assertive with a handshake.
Yeah, you just got to. I'm not saying being a jerk or anything, folks. I'm just saying, you know, and it doesn't surprise me. Stuart's he's a footballer, you know, at heart, you know, he grew up macho guy, you know, he's a tough guy. Well, folks, my little thing is bringing here. Hey, you got to see the movie. It's Warlord. And while you're at it, they're all out. Watch the others as well, man. Have a film festival at your house and watch all these movies. You know, how cool would that be? Yeah,
that would be so cool.
I suspect if you're going to watch one, you're going to want to watch the others as well. Because, you know, it's fantasy.
I hope so. And if you enjoy them, reach out on Instagram or any platform, really, and just say hey and say that you watched it and enjoyed it. And do that with any independent film or any independent art, because it means so much to the artist. Just you're having a bad day and suddenly your phone pings and somebody's just saying something nice. Like I say, we all get that wave of hate when you release something new. They're the quickest to speak up. So when you can be a candle in the dark, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Stuart, for taking time to be on the show. We really appreciate it. And folks out there, I know the world's a weird place. My advice some young people I know gave me, again, I'm an old man, and sometimes I have the trappings of being one, because I was getting pretty worked up. I was starting to watch the news like my father watched hockey games. You know what I mean? I'm yelling at the TV and trying, you know, to explain how tariffs work. Jesus Christ, our country. Anyway, don't get me started. But they told me, they said, Jamie, you're doom scrolling. I said, what the hell's doom scroll? I thought I was being cool, like some kind of metal music or something. I said, what do you mean? I still like Duran Duran. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, you're scrolling through looking for all the horrible stuff. You're getting addicted to it. And I thought about it, and I'm like, yeah, I am. I need to step away from this for a little bit, you know? And so I started to. So I'm not saying be blissfully ignorant on all levels, but don't get obsessed with this stuff. And have a little patience. Be kind. If your waitress takes an extra couple minutes to bring you a refill on coffee, you ain't going to die. Just be patient. And if you're traveling, I find them hilarious. But do lay off the booze before you fly. Don't be a Karen in a YouTube video. Again, I find them very funny. But you don't want that grief in your life. You know, you don't want the police escorting you off the plane, and you ain't going to win that argument. That's spoiler for you. Just be cool. Folks, we'll see you next time.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited.
Hanna Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.